I think everyone probably does it when you just feeling good on the trail and you're having so much fun. You just want to put your arms out like you're an airplane, like a little kid. And I realized that that should probably be the basis of like my why of why I run. And if I can keep that as my number one priority, everything else seems to fall into place. So my motto is airplane arms or you're doing it wrong. Where if it's like not so much fun that you're doing airplane arms, you're not doing it right, because it at the end of the day should be something fun that you're doing.
For Grayson Murphy, having fun is her number one priority. But it's not stopped her becoming one, if not the greatest mountain runner of all time. I'm Craig Lewis, and this is the Running Tales podcast, where we tell the extraordinary stories of everyday runners. But there's nothing everyday about this week's guest, Grayson Murphy. The two times world mountain running champion took first place in the 2019 race in what was her debut at the event. It was all part of a steep curve towards success for Grayson, who didn't even take up running as a sport until she went to university. The former football, or as she'd say, soccer player took to the track in style, becoming a five times All-American and setting records in the steeplechase, 5,000 and 10,000 meter events while at the University of Utah, all despite not having run more than 3 miles at one time before turning up at practice. However, after she turned professional in the track, Grayson made a sudden and surprising switch to mountain and trail running. Victory at the US Championships, which she's now won 3 times, and then the Worlds followed. A love of running in all its forms saw her return to the track in 2021, and at that year's Olympic trials, she finished 6th in the 3,000 metre steeplechase, narrowly missing out on a place at the Games. Then it was back to the mountains to grab her second world championship win at the 2023 event in Austria, where she captured victory in the up and downhill race. I started off my chat with Grayson about her incredible career by asking her when she first started running seriously.
I didn't start running until my second year of university in the US. So yeah, there wasn't a lot of running in the prior years, but there was a lot of soccer. So there was definitely running, just not in like the traditional sense.
Did you get the idea when you're at school playing a lot of soccer that I am a good runner, but that's part of a different sport rather than running?
Yeah, I guess we always did the PE mile, and they'd make all the kids run a mile. And I always won that with my twin sister. So we knew that we were good at running, but I think both of us were like, it's not fun. Why would we go do this sport if we can do another sport? So we just really didn't have a interest, even knowing that we were good in it.
And soccer was the sport that you loved at that point?
Yeah, I liked running for a ball. I liked having a reason to run.
As you said, you got into running when you went off to university, but I don't think that wasn't a straightforward thing either, was it? You sort of went, I think, to one place to do football. So I can't call it
yeah.
to do football, and then sort of thought, hold on, this isn't working out for me, and maybe actually this running thing will work out. How did that change happen?
Yeah, I guess the soccer, football just wasn't as fun as it was growing up. And I think I'd worked so hard for a goal, which was to play at the university level with football, and then got there and it wasn't everything I had hoped and dreamed it would be, which I feel like is kind of a common thing with people. You kind of reach your goal and then you're like, wait a minute, that's not what I was expecting. So I transferred schools. I picked the new school for academic reasons. They had a good engineering program. And then when I got there, I just asked the coaches on the track team if I could maybe try out or something. I knew I wanted to be in that athletic environment, but I didn't have any other sports that I could kind of like walk on to other than running. So that was like my last ditch attempt to still be involved in sports in some way.
At that point, when we're talking track team, what kind of distances were you doing? And was it something that instantly you thought, hey, actually, I am quite good at this?
Yeah, I guess. So the school here starts in the fall. So I got there in August and they were like, well, we do cross country too. So you'll do cross country first in the fall and then hit track in the spring. So I started with cross country, and I think until I had raced the cross country stuff, they had thought maybe you're like an 800 meter runner or more middle distance. But then after cross country, I did really well, and they were like, oh, I think you're more of a distance runner, actually. So then in the spring, I started with steeplechase, 5K, 1500 kind of stuff.
And did you enjoy it then? Because you sort of said that when you were at college, oh, I didn't really enjoy the running. But presumably at that point, you sort of thought, hey, you know what? I quite like this thing.
Yeah, I did. I think my teammates were really fun, so they made the sport for me. If I hadn't had great teammates like that, I don't know that I would have enjoyed it as much. But it was fun to just learn something new too in a new sport. There were so many things I didn't know about it. All the gear, I had no idea. So I think I was just in it for it being new, and it was hard, but it still is hard. So that hasn't gotten any better. But I think I just like the newness of it.
Yeah, I've heard you talk about this with on other podcasts or things before about just how new it was, and there was colleagues who'd perhaps been doing it all throughout their school years, their college years, who are like, well, what is Grayson doing here? This is crazy. She kind of doesn't even know how to start a race properly. And you did have to ask some pretty sort of basic questions, I think.
I have to give them credit for being patient with me and even letting me on the team, and I don't blame them at all for being a little bit annoyed that I was let on the team, because it was a Division One program in the NCAA, which typically means you're better in coming out of high school and there's scholarships and stuff. I wasn't on a scholarship because I had no experience, but it worked out that they just needed another woman so they could have another guy on the team for Title IX reasons. So I was like their Title IX person, and then it worked out.
Do you ever think with just getting in on something that's almost a technicality like that, and we'll go on to what you've achieved and what you're doing now, but do you sort of think, you know, maybe if I'd have enjoyed soccer a little bit more at the first university you went to, maybe if they hadn't have needed this guy to join the team, you would never have got into running and never have found out this sort of talent that you have.
Yeah, I think that a lot. And I also think, what if I had started running sooner? But I think both paths don't lead to the same place. So I'm glad I'm on whatever weird path I'm on, and I'll stay on that one.
Well, as we'll find out in a little bit, for people who don't know, it's worked out pretty well for you. But when you started running at university, were you instantly the fastest there, even though you'd not done it before, or did it take a little bit of time to catch up what you hadn't done in school?
I think foot speed, I was pretty near the top of the group, just like short intervals, but you could tell that I didn't have a great base. So like 8 miles for me was quite a lot. I had not run more than three at one time before showing up at practice. So they definitely had like the bigger aerobic engine. So that was something I had to work on catching up with. But I think soccer gives you quite a bit of good running training. Secretly, it's hidden in all of the running you do. So I think that actually worked out in my favor this time.
As you moved on through your journey at university, obviously, I guess you kind of fairly quickly got to the point where you were top of the class and winning a few races. And I think you obviously got these, I think, five All-American honors. Can you explain to, we're quite largely a British audience, and I think people kind of know what All-American is. We normally hear it in relation to something like American football or something, but obviously it's much more than that, isn't it?
So it's kind of the top level honor you can achieve in any NCAA sport. So with cross country, it's quite a lot. It's like the top 40 people. But there are, I think in the nationals for D1, there's 350 people in that race. So it's the top 40 get all American. And then with track, it's a bit harder. So indoor track, it's the top eight at indoor nationals. And just getting to indoor nationals is a little bit harder than outdoor because the season is so short. And then outdoor, it's top eight as well, but there are a couple more rounds. So typically people think indoor nationals is the hardest national championship to make. But yeah, basically it's like the top eight ish of every national championship. So It's cool to, you can rack them up quickly if you are good, because runners have three chances a year and other sports only have one. So you do have runners sometimes that are getting like 20 plus All-Americans if they're competing in multiple events.
I'm thinking by the time you're getting these in a reasonably short period of time from sort of taking up running a bit more seriously, you've instantly achieved quite a lot. You must be starting to feel, hey, I am pretty good at this. What were your thoughts about running at that stage? Because you're obviously doing a degree at the same time. Are you thinking, I'm going to do this professionally? I can do this professionally, or is it still a bit of fun?
So after my second year at Santa Clara, which was where I started running, I knew that I was getting quite good. I qualified for nationals in two events in my second season. So I thought, I want to see how good I can be at this, because it seems like I have a knack for it and I'm enjoying it. So I transferred to Utah for my final 2 years of eligibility. Just for it was a bigger program and I could get a scholarship there, and that was really helpful because school is very expensive here. I kind of went for that, but I went into Utah telling the coach up front, I think I want to run professionally when I'm done with you in 2 years. And he was like, didn't bat an eye. He was like, yep, we can do that, I can get you there. So I didn't know running professionally was a profession until probably my second year running. So it was pretty quick, the going from just starting to realizing it's a profession to deciding that's what I want to do. But I don't know, I was having a lot of fun. So I thought, I don't want it to be over in just 4 years. I would like to keep pushing. I just got started.
It's really interesting you're talking at the moment about how much fun and how much you're enjoying the running, because I know, and perhaps we'll touch on this later, that when it came to kind of some of the track stuff, that later on that didn't become so much fun for you. But at this point, what was it that was just so much fun? Was it those colleagues really encouraging you, something new, getting the endorphins going?
Yeah, I think all of the above. It's pretty addicting too to have a steep learning curve where every time you're stepping on the line, you're PRing or learning something new. I thought that was pretty fun, and it just kind of was exponentially getting better and better and better. So that was admittedly pretty fun too. But I think I've been really lucky to have coaches and teammates that have just made it what it is for me, and I don't know that my trajectory would have been the same without them.
And was the steeplechase something that you gravitated towards, or that you were pushed towards? Because it's not, you know, I don't know, in the great pantheon of running, people think about, I don't know, 100, 200, 400, 800, and not so much steeplechase, maybe.
I think the first coaches I had at Santa Clara, in that first meeting I had with them when I explained I was a soccer player, they were like, oh, I think you could be a middle distance runner, or you could be a steeplechaser, because you're obviously, or we hope that you're pretty agile and athletic because you've just come from soccer. So, and I thought they showed me, I didn't know what it was. So they showed me pictures of it on their computer. And I was like, well, that seems pretty fun. It's like a little obstacle course race. Like, why not? I'll try that. And then I did it for the first time that first spring, and it was fun. So I just kept kind of doing it. It wasn't something I even knew existed until they brought it up.
And a thought that just popped into my head as you were sort of talking about that, the agile nature of it, and a spoiler for anyone who doesn't know the rest of your story and how you've got the mountain running now. How useful are the sort of skills you learnt in steeplechase to what you're doing now when you're racing up and down those trails?
Oh, it's pretty useful. I would say probably the soccer skills are what I use for both disciplines more. But yeah, I think steeplers make great trail runners. So if you're out there and you're interested, I think it's a good sign if you're good at steeple that you'll probably be good at trail running.
We're going to have loads of trail runners going out
Yeah.
doing steeplechase
Yeah,
again.
go the other way.
As you moved on at university, you've got this goal of being professional. What was the next step then when you left? Was there an obvious progression into being this professional runner that you were now hoping to be?
Not super like obvious in some ways. I guess I had had coaches, professional coaches reaching out, and agents my senior year, so there were options on the table, and I picked the one that seemed like the best on paper, because I really this is only my fourth year running, and so I really didn't have an idea of a lot of things, of even what I was good at yet, what training I enjoyed or didn't enjoy. And my coach knew that too, so we both, my college coach, so we both conferred and decided, well, we'll pick the best one on paper then and just see how it goes. And if anything, it's a learning experience, because I like to think of it kind of as, that was kind of me as like a senior in high school, if you were to compare it to the age of when people generally start running, which is pretty young to be making a decision about a professional contract. So we just had to go in with that mindset that you're still in the learning phase. So if this isn't exactly right, then that's okay too.
Yeah, and I want to talk about what you got on to next in a little while. But one thing I also wanted to explore really was this idea around you obviously started late and took massive leaps and bounds onwards quite quickly. And I think the way we've been speaking about it, which is probably my fault, makes it sound, oh, it was all quite easy. Grayson just rocked up and then was suddenly the fastest runner around. But I'm guessing there's, you know, although you may be a lesson for nature being important, there was, I'm sure, a lot of hard work along the way as well.
Yeah, I don't think it wasn't like I just walked on. I did lots of workouts. I did the training. None of the training was crazy. It was probably on the low end of normal. But like I said, my coaches were great, and they understood that this is only my like maybe third year running, or fourth year running. So I can't be training like I've been running for 8 years. I have to be training like I've been running for 3 or 4 years. And I think that was really helpful, and just like gently bringing me up to speed instead of kind of throwing me off the deep end. And I'm really grateful for that, because I've seen it happen the other way to some people too, and it doesn't generally end as well.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing around really making running or any sport maybe a bit too professional, a bit hard-nosed too yeah. early. And that was something I think which you started to find as you moved into that professional arena, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I learned to, like, just because I'm a professional now doesn't mean I can train like a 35-year-old woman that's been training as a pro for 10 years, 10 plus years. It just doesn't quite work that way. And at least for me, maybe for some people it does, but my body just needs a little more time to get used to stuff. So yeah, in general, I've been a pretty low mileage runner, I would say, throughout my whole career. And I don't have like the super sexy Strava workouts that some people talk about, maybe one day, but mine are pretty, I feel like if you looked at my Strava, you'd be like, that seems pretty standard for everything. But that's kind of how I like to train too, is I'd like to just be more efficient. If I can get more out of less for the longest period of time that I can, I'd rather do that than be running 100 miles a week just because, for no reason, just to say that I do.
As you moved on, just to bring us, keep the story moving along, you did keep the steeplechase going, and that became something that you did to, well, a very high level, but I think you were sort of on the cusp of the Olympics, I suppose. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, fair. 3 seconds or 4 seconds.
Yeah, that's pretty close. Was that the aim? Was that the goal? We're going to just move on. We're going to keep having a crack towards the Olympics.
Yeah, I think so. I think just because there's not really a personal goal of mine. I definitely wouldn't say no to going to the Olympics if someone said you get to go. But I was not the kid that grew up dreaming of going to the Olympics for sports. And I understand that that's like the epitome of our sport. And I think that gets pushed on a lot of runners. So I would want it for that reason, but that's not why I run, is to go to the Olympics. And that's not how I'm going to define success in my career, is making an Olympic team or not, especially now that I'm doing an event that's not even in the Olympics, but maybe one day.
Yeah, well, that would be fantastic, I think. But this is quite interested in this sort of fast move up through university into running, a lot of success, moving to this level of the cusp of the Olympics, as I said, and then you kind of went, I'm going to do something different. Yeah. Can you explain to people what that was and why you made that decision?
Yeah, I guess. Well, I started trail running before I almost made the Olympic team, just because it sounded fun. There was really no other reason. It just sounded cool. And I grew up in Salt Lake City, Utah, which, if people haven't been or know, it's a really mountainous place. And so every summer I was in the mountains with my family hiking. We weren't running, but we hiked a lot and biked a lot and camped a lot. So I felt home in the mountains. And then I thought, why not run in them? If I like, no one had really introduced that idea to me before, because I think in the US pipeline, at least when you're in college and NCAA, it's not typical to go from track and cross country to trail running. People want to keep you in that track pipeline and kind of keep you like track and road after college. So it was kind of a weird sidestep that I think a lot of people questioned. But I was just like, well, it's in my hometown. The race is right out my back door. Why not try it? And I did one. And it was just so much fun that I thought, I can't not do this now. I just had way too much fun racing. So that's it for me. I'm hooked.
Yeah, I think we have the same thing here, really, in terms of if you're going through school, university onto professional athletes, it is kind of that I don't know, I guess that Olympic goal, that track goal and so on. And I think people who, I mean, I haven't done it myself, so there may be people screaming at this podcast saying, no, Craig, there are routes, but I think people who do that tend to just do it themselves rather than through any formal route. But I think you ended up finding it a lot more enjoyable than you'd started to find the track, which, if I'm right, had started to come with a few pre-race nerves and things like that.
I'd always been nervous in college, but it just the intensity and the level of competition just continued to increase. The older I got, and as a professional, it was just even that much higher than NCAAs. And I realized the training too, I didn't necessarily enjoy as much. And if you gave me the option to go run on the track for the day or go run in the mountains, I would pick the mountains. And I thought that was pretty telling of maybe what I should be focusing towards. So I still do track, and I did track, even after doing winning worlds in 2019, but I think it was more of just to show that you can and to stay fast. It wasn't necessarily the main goal of the season.
It's quite unusual, isn't it, to do to A8 the route you've done, but then also to still be involved in what some people see as almost completely different sports?
Yeah, I think some people can't wrap their brain around it. I get asked a lot, how do you train for that? But it's all just running. And at the end of the day, that's all you're doing, just on different surfaces. So I don't think it's too much different.
When you were when so when you started trail running, and actually, just for people listening, when you talk about trail running, I think it's perhaps important to just spell out to people what that means in terms of distance and so on, because people tend to just think about, oh, trail running, that means you're doing 50K or another miler, but that's not necessarily the what you're doing, is it?
No, yeah, I'm not an ultra runner. I would not put myself there, but I do mostly mountain races and sub ultra, which is under 50K for the most part. Yeah, so my race is the World Championship Classic race is usually around 15K, so they are quite short and steeper, a little bit more technical, usually, except not this year for some reason. So they're very accessible. And I don't think, especially in the US, a lot of people don't know that even exists. They just think, oh, Western States or Hard Rock, UTMB. They don't realize there's options outside of that.
One of the things which I find amazing about running, and I suppose it goes into the thing we spoke about a minute ago, is that this same thing of putting one foot in front of the other can have such a wide variety, from Usain Bolt in the 100 meters to somebody doing the Marathon des Sables or the Barkley Marathons, or all these things over several days. It's incredible the way that that kind of works and the variety to one sport, because I mean, you get five a side in soccer, but there's not that much variety.
It is pretty cool to think about and how extensive the running community is because of all of the different disciplines within it.
When you started to do the trails, was it much the same as the stuff within university? You took to it pretty quickly. I think you mentioned you did the first race and you won it, and it kind of went on from there, didn't it?
It was just fun. I was doing well pretty quickly, immediately, pretty much. But I think I was having so much fun too, and I recognize that as a key to success, that you're really enjoying it truly. On the track, I've never felt the level of joy that I feel when I'm running on trails, and I think that that can really elevate you to the next level and get like the extra 1% out of you to do some cool things.
And I am gonna, because you're being modest, I'm gonna make you tell people what you've won in this mountain running world, because it's pretty extensive and it's pretty impressive.
I've won the world championships twice.
Yeah, and you've won more than that
I have, yeah, I've won a lot of races.
because I've heard you described, so I'm gonna embarrass you now, but I've heard you describe on at least one podcast and in other things as sort of possibly the best, if not the best completely, at the very least the best female mountain runner ever. Does that sort of, what do you feel when you get that kind of description? Can you quite believe it?
I think it's really nice of them to say that. Sometimes I'm not sure that most of the time I don't know that I believe that, or I think surely someone else has been better than this. 'Cause I'm just out here having fun. Like, surely someone else has done something better.
You were very modest about it. That's cool. When you first went to the World Championships, did you think I've got a good chance of winning this, or was it still just a natural part of that journey and let's see how we go?
Oh my gosh, yeah, I had no idea. I had won US Nationals to qualify, but I had no idea. I'd never raced any international trail runners, so I thought, oh, I don't know. Maybe we're just not that good in the US, and I won, and then now we have to go race these Europeans who are supposed to be really good at downhills. Yeah, I had no idea. So I just went out at the front and started running, and then no one ever caught me, and I thought that was really strange. Coming in the finish, I thought, did I take a wrong turn? Like, what's going on? There's like nobody challenging me the whole race, and I thought that was weird. That never happened before.
So you led that race the whole way through. That must be, I mean, I've never led the whole way through. If I competed in an under fives race now, I still wouldn't have led the whole way through. But how did that feel? That must have been quite disorientating.
Yeah, it was really surreal, and I don't know that in the moment it didn't really register like what had happened, because it seemed so strange, the way that it had all worked out. It was like a dream almost, and not even like a good dream. It was kind of like a confusing dream where you don't really know what had happened. And I think it took me like a year or two to kind of come around to the idea that it was like real and had happened, not for a fluke, and it wasn't like just a one-off, like it had happened for a reason.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how did you feel when you crossed that line in first place? And also, how did other competitors and other people around the sport feel? Because you were obviously quite new to this still.
Yeah, I was very confused. I think some of the US staff, some of the coaches had thought that I could win, but they'd been going to these races for years and had seen lots of athletes come through, so they had a much better idea of like what it took to win, I think, than I did. And they had told me before, I think you could win, but I thought they're just being nice, or I have no idea why they're telling me this stuff. But I think a lot of the other countries were also confused, like, who is this person? And there are some people online too that I unfortunately saw there comments, and they also were like, well, like the Africans weren't there. The Uganda and Kenya didn't get their visas approved that year to go to Argentina, so they weren't at the race. And I had some people saying, like, well, she wouldn't have done well if like real people had been there, basically. And that was kind of hurtful too, and just added to my confusion as well, because I was already confused with the result, and then people were saying this, and I was so new to the space, I had no idea if the things they were saying had any weight to it or not.
It sounds like even in that moment of victory, partly because you were so new to it, but also partly because of these awful sounding people online, that there was a little bit of imposter syndrome in there as well.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Yeah. And I think I've carried that with me probably until this world championship. And I remember thinking this year, running down with the flag, no one can say anything this year to you, and you've earned this one. And it felt like I'd won, finally, like, realized that I'd won two races in that one race. Like, I'd waited 4 years to kind of come full circle about the other one and give that victory to myself finally.
You've kind of just answered the next question I was asked, which was, how did it feel to shut all those people up by doing it again?
It felt really good. And I made sure too to be like, you enjoy this moment, because last time you were so confused about what happened. I don't know that I like fully enjoyed the moment. So this time I just wanted to soak it all in. So I guess it was a good learning experience because it made this time better.
And you've spoken a few times about how much you enjoy getting out on the trails and running on the mountains. And one way that that shows in your running is through this aeroplane thing that you do.
Yeah.
Tell people about that.
Yeah, I just, it's so fun. And I think everyone probably does it when you just feeling good on the trail and you're having so much fun. You just want to put your arms out like you're an airplane, like a little kid. And I realized that should probably be the basis of like my why, of why I run. And if I can keep that as my number one priority, everything else seems to fall into place. So my motto is airplane arms or you're doing it wrong. Where if it's like not so much fun that you're doing airplane arms, you're not doing it right. Because it at the end of the day should be something fun that you're doing.
And it strikes me in saying that obviously you're doing this thing running at an elite level, but and you were kind of stumbled upon it in a way, but that feeling of having so much fun and doing the aeroplane arms when you're out running, that's something which anybody listening to this podcast, whether they're doing a park run or whatever, really can tap into, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a good way to stay present in the moment, present in the run too, which I think a lot of people can get, myself included. That's why I say it to myself. You can get lost in the pace, or that you're not feeling good that day, or you're stressed about work, or you have a race coming up, whatever it is. But if you can just remember at least once to do airplane arms and give yourself that like moment of joy, then the run will probably be better for it. And your life will probably be better.
I've been out on a little trail run this evening, and I didn't do aeroplane arms, so I must remember to do that.
Gotta go back, yeah.
Yeah, I have to go back out again.
Yeah.
But I also don't know. I mean, I've just started doing trail runs fairly recently, and I suppose it's an occupational hazard, isn't it? But I spectacularly tripped over a tree root the other day straight on my face.
No.
How do you avoid that when you're doing the speed you're doing?
Oh, I just had to answer some questions on this. But my top tips for downhill running were relax. So it's like when you're mountain biking or skiing and they tell you to relax, because if you're tense, you're more likely to crash. So relax, even if you feel like it looks kind of funny. Like there's a video of me at Worlds this year. My arm looks broken because it's so relaxed. It's like flopping around, but I feel like that helps you not fall. And then quick feet. If you can just think of it as like hopscotch or like the tango or something where you're moving your feet really quickly, where not every step needs to land perfectly, because you're so quick that if it does slip, you're already on your way to your next step by the time you're kind of falling. That's my other tip. So yeah, relax and quick feet.
Yes, yeah, it's that mountain goat thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Exactly. And just finally, what is next for you on this trip? Because I have heard various things, including possibly stepping up and doing marathons and things like that.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I'll do the US marathon trials in February next year for the Olympics. And then I have some big goals on the road too, with the marathon and half marathon. So I won't get rid of that stuff. But this year, the remainder will be Golden Trail Series races. So still trail for the rest of 2023.
And keep enjoying it.
Yep, airplane arms.
Fantastic. Grayson, thank you so much for joining us today on Running Tales. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks again to Grayson Murphy for joining us on the Running Tales podcast. If you enjoyed our conversation as much as I did, then please take some time to give us a review or a rating wherever you listen to Running Tales. Those positive reviews means the podcast gets seen by a wider audience. So the more we get, then the more people get to listen to the inspiring stories of guests like Grayson. Also, if you want to see and hear more of our content, please be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Running Tales Pod, on Facebook, where our page is called Running Tales, or check out our YouTube channel at Running Tales Pod, which now features full episodes of each podcast. You can subscribe to our newsletter as well by visiting runningtales.substack.com. That's runningtales.substack.com, where you can find written versions of our podcast, as well as articles on a wide variety of subjects from the world of running and regular updates. Thanks as ever for all of your support, and I'll see you next week for another Running Tales podcast.